Aubrey Warner with NSH, and I am excited to introduce NSH's newest podcast series, SC Workshop Snippets. Over the next month, NSH Convention Committee members will interview presenters about their upcoming workshop at the 43rd Annual NSH Symposium Convention in Orlando, Florida. You can expect to walk away from each episode with a little bit of new knowledge and a thirst to learn more about this topic and others at NSH's Annual Symposium Convention. To learn more about this episode's featured workshop and all available workshops, visit www.histoconvention.org. I hope you enjoy the episode, and hopefully I will see you in Orlando.
Hi, everyone. This is Kathy Dwyer, and I am an NSH program team member. This year, as the program team reviewed all the fantastic abstracts, I got excited about workshop number 76, Proficiency Testing in the Anatomic Pathology Laboratory. And it is presented by Jeremy Johnston. I am particularly excited about this workshop because I am in quality assurance and I always receive questions every day about this topic. So for that reason, I am thrilled to be sitting down today with Jeremy to get a sneak peek at his session. So welcome, Jeremy, and I want to start our conversation by asking, why are you so excited about proficiency testing, and why is this something that you really deeply care about?
Hey, Kathy. Proficiency testing is something that's obviously integral to our laboratories. I've been in this profession for about 15 years now, had the privilege of doing mini cap inspections, large, small labs, kind of everything in between, and developing in-house proficiency testing programs for my current lab from kind of the ground up and just trying to improve on what we've got. So it's something that I'm excited about, and I think there's a lot of room for improvement, and hopefully our listeners are excited about it as I am.
And I know that every day the laboratory has to deal with training, competency, proficiency testing. So how does this subject of proficiency testing fit into our listeners' everyday laboratory day-to-day operations, and why would it be important for them to attend your lecture at the NSH this year?
You know, that's a great question. Everybody should be fairly well-versed and understand proficiency testing, but there's a lot of nuance. There are some new things coming down the pipeline, but probably the biggest thing is just that every year we've continued to see people get dinged for stuff. It ends up on the top 10 deficiency list that CAP publishes. So it tells me there is still room for improvement there.
And I think in our laboratories, we don't actually understand the proficiency testing. We know that there's regulated proficiency testing, and we know that CMS and CAP ask us to do an internal proficiency testing. And I think that, you know, hopefully you'll discuss this information during your workshop. So why do you suppose that it's still ending up on the top 10 of the CAP checklist?
Yeah, I don't think it's for lack of intention. I think everybody goes into proficiency testing wanting to do the right thing and wanting to have good results. I think it's, you know, unfortunately people get cited for things like forgetting to sign an attestation page, or they don't even know that that's a requirement, or it's clerical issues when they're submitting results. There's a lot of stuff that if you're not familiar with it, or even if you are, you kind of go on autopilot, and I think it's good to have those reminders, and we'll touch on some ways to hopefully help in that process.
Now, when we're talking about proficiency testing, you're particularly talking about in the histology world. And is there any, besides CAP, who provides our proficiency testing for our immunohistochemistry and our histoquips and MKs, is there any other alternative proficiency testing options available in the laboratories? I know that if there's nothing that's regulated, we do struggle with trying to find something to use for our immunohistochemistry.
Yeah, that's a great question. You really don't know what you don't know. So my thought process is that there probably are labs out there that aren't aware of some of these non-CAP-based programs. For example, our laboratory and different labs that I work with are associated with the Canadian immunohistochemistry program up in Canada, and also with the UK NEQAS over in England. Both great programs. We're still heavily using CAP, but I think to augment or supplement some of the esoteric testing, we do use some of those programs, and I'd recommend them. And we'll discuss those in the lecture.
Very good. Do labs just participate in proficiency testing to maintain their CLIA and CAP certificate, or why else would a lab want to have proficiency testing?
Yeah, really, this is the part that gets me the most excited. Labs can get creative with what they do with their proficiency testing. For example, CAP requires us to evaluate our inter-observer variability, and that's a mouthful, but really they just want to make sure our pathologists are kind of on the same page, producing the same diagnosis. If they're looking at the same slide, we should render the same diagnosis. And unfortunately, we don't always, because there's a lot of subjectivity. So I'm hoping that we can discuss some ways to help that process as well.
I know that our pathologists in my laboratory use their second review process as part of the alternative proficiency testing. Do you have any comments about that use in the laboratory?
Yeah, so they do have requirements. CAP, you're not allowed to have that information up front, but once the results have been submitted, you do have, and I would recommend, as you said your lab does, and we do as well, you know, there's close to 1,000 labs that participate in programs like the ERPR and HER2 surveys. So it's a widely utilized survey, and you can use different information that they give you in the summarized report, like the HER2 copy number and FISH ratios, to your advantage. That information is there just waiting to be used, and I would definitely encourage labs to use that, and we'll show some ways that they can.
I know in clinical pathology, you can use proficiency testing to meet some of your continuing education requirements. And I'm curious if there are any histology-centric proficiency testing programs that will give you continuing education for your participation.
Yeah, there are. I'm guessing if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are the type of person that is already aware of some of these programs. But one example would be the HistoQIP program, so the quality improvement project that NSH and CAP are kind of partners on. And, you know, 80 different countries participate in this. So, again, it's another widely utilized program, and it's a really good means of assessing your quality of your stains. And at the end of the day, that's why we do proficiency testing, is to increase the quality and the results that we're producing as techs in the lab.
So how many CEUs do you think a tech would get by participating in these programs? I know that if you're part of the HistoQIP program, you can get some CEUs for that. So can you give us some examples of that?
Yeah, so with the HistoQIP program, I do know the CE portion of it is underutilized. So I am one of the graders in there, and I've had the privilege of doing that for quite a while, and they do give us they let us know that each of these programs, what portion of it's utilized. Each member that participates in this proficiency testing can get credit for CE. So regardless of if it's just one person or three people, all three people would be able to get credit. So at the completion of your survey, each member would have to answer a few questions that pertain to the survey, and then they get two free CEs. So that would be two free CEs for every single person in your lab that did that. And again, for this specific one, there's two mailings each year, so that's four CEs that you're already paying for the proficiency testing, and now you're getting kind of a double benefit for participation. So I would encourage people to definitely take advantage of that.
Yeah, that's really exciting because, you know, there's a lot of companies or laboratories that require mandatory continuing education and also the certificate maintenance program. So this is a great way to get some of those hours in. So you're so knowledgeable about this. And if someone that's listening to this podcast would like to become more familiar with this topic, is there anything that you would suggest that they read or go to the CAP website so they can learn a little bit more about this before they come to your workshop?
Yeah, if you do a simple Google search or if you go to the CAP website and do plug in proficiency testing, you will see they've got quite a few resources, and we'll discuss a lot of those in the lecture, but you're right. If they either aren't able to attend or they want to kind of get a base level of information, that would be a great way of going about that. It'd be to visit the CAP website for sure.
Well, thank you, Jeremy. And as we're wrapping this conversation up, are there any other words of wisdom you would like to tell anyone before they sign up for your workshop?
No, I just appreciate, I know proficiency testing can be a dry topic, but hopefully we'll make it a little bit more exciting and give them some resources. We'll have plenty of resources that they'll be able to take away to improve their laboratory process.
Well, thank you, Jeremy, and I'm excited about this workshop, and you will see my face there listening to your lecture. So thank you so much for taking your time today.
Yeah, thank you, Kathy.
I hope you enjoyed this preview. To read the complete abstract for this workshop and learn more about the symposium convention this September in Orlando, Florida, visit www.histoconvention.org.